take Instagram and turn Instagram in your mind into a person. Like it's your Instagram person. And you're having, instead of looking stuff up, you're kind of having a back and forth conversation of like, gosh, I don't know what to wear today. And the Instagram person can be like, well, you know, and make suggestions, or like a lot of people are wearing this kind of thing, or people in your area are wearing that kind of thing. Oh, you looked at the picture yesterday wearing that. Maybe you want to try that. And you're like, oh, I'll do that.
This is Samantha G. Wolfe talking about how we will shop in the future and what opportunities this brings for brands. She's my guest for this episode of Lives of Tomorrow. Now, Samantha runs and is the founder of Pitch Forward, a consulting firm that helps navigate the world of new and emerging technologies. And one of the predictions from Pitch Forward, and also one of the things that we at WGSN mention in many of our forecasts, is that we will use avatars to do most of our shopping, and brands will have to find ways to interact with our avatars in the future, something called direct-to-avatar economy. And that's the topic of today's podcast. I'm Carla Bazzacchi, CEO of WGSN, the world's leading trend forecasting company, and you're listening to Lives of Tomorrow, the WGSN podcast about how we will live our lives in the future. Samantha, to kick things off, could you introduce yourself to our listeners?
I'm Samantha G. Wolfe. I go by Sam generally, but I focus on emerging technologies and sort of the communication and making sense of emerging technologies. So that can vary from brand strategy and marketing strategy with new technology companies, sort of emerging technology companies. I'm an adjunct professor at NYU. I teach a bunch of different classes. The one that's sort of the most relevant to this is an avatar and virtual beings class, in addition to a business of the metaverse and marketing emerging tech. And I've co-authored a couple of books, most recent of which is Metaverse, See Beyond the Hype, because all of it is just that sort of sense making of new technologies.
Do you know what? I don't think I've ever heard anyone call them virtual beings, which is weird. I mean, I talk about the future all the time. I really like that. I prefer that.
Well, I think that, you know, some of it is in that sense making, I like to like break things down, even if it's not perfect, even if the Venn diagram overlaps. I like to think of avatars as representations of yourself. And whereas a virtual being is something that is more autonomous, semi-autonomous, that doesn't exist in the real world. And so, although with a virtual being, but they overlap. I like being at the beginning of things, and I like to help people sort of accelerate the understanding of what they're doing, making it much, much easier for people to understand the value.
So just to pick a starting point, at WGSN, we've been talking a lot about the direct-to-avatar economy. You're an absolute expert on this. But there are going to be some listeners who are like, what on earth are you talking about? So for someone for whom this sounds sci-fi, weird, what is the direct-to-avatar economy?
To me, it's just like an avatar ecosystem is more what I think of it as, this idea. And usually people, if they're not familiar with emerging technologies, they definitely are familiar with gaming.
Yes.
You know, or they're familiar with like a Bitmoji on Snapchat. Like anything where you're creating a character, a digital character of yourself. So if you happen to have kids, you've probably heard of Roblox or Fortnite or anything. You're creating sort of versions, Roblox in particular, of yourself that you're playing. And what happens within those games is that you create what they call skins, which is just basically outfits and what hairstyle or whatever. And sometimes, you know, to a certain degree, they end up being free, but sometimes you're actually paying for it in addition. And that economy of paying for it, spending like what is now billions of dollars on skins, on hairstyles and whatever, is what they call sort of a direct avatar economy. You're not spending it on physical goods, you're spending it on digital goods, but digital goods that you would wear in the broadest sense of even your, what they call emotes, which is basically your dance moves. You might have to pay for certain dance moves. So it's your, I guess to recap, it's the money that's being spent to define avatar outfits, looks, whatever. And it's billions and billions of dollars.
had a really interesting conversation with someone who works for a very well-known beauty brand. And she was trying to persuade their CEO to sign off money for a certain kind of investment. And they said, we just, you know, hey, the metaverse isn't really going anywhere. And this economy is not that big. And so she said to them, what do you buy your kids for Christmas? And it was Robux.
Robux. Yeah.
And so, you know, it was like, oh, okay, this is all the same thing. This is all the same thing. And it was a good kind of confirmation in her instance when she was lobbying to get something done. But a reminder for all of us, this isn't something that's just a flash in the pan. Huge amounts of money, millions and millions is being spent and probably out of our own pockets, even if in some instances, depending on ages, although it's not all about ages. Which brands do you think have actually taken all the best of the new technologies that are available and created something that really resonates with a consumer and does make a, you know, I guess expands our minds?
For me, it's anybody that's trying to do something a little bit different or innovative, trying to integrate more than one technology. Those are the ones that I'm like, oh, that's fascinating. I wonder if you could do it in this other industry or this other place. Like that, I think that people forget that innovation sometimes can just be taking one industry and applying it to your own.
Do you think there's anyone, and that could be individual or company, that's doing good in this space, that's making the world a better place through the use of these new technologies?
I think that there's a lot of companies that want to. I think there's organizations that do. There's an organization called Games for Change or XR for Change that does that. I think that there's right now a lot more of the funding of creative change makers to make things in this space, as opposed to creating an experience that gets you to come out and donate to something or be more involved in something. Like, I think in that way, yes. In the Avatars and Virtual Beings class, I teach it at Steinhardt at NYU, and there's a lot of people that are very politically active, interested in lots of sort of changing the world. And so what I did for our final project is I said, if you could create a virtual being for good, like what would it be? And let's say budget's no object, that you can just let your creativity flow. And what I found over and over again, and maybe this is a little depressing, is that most of them end up coming up with a therapist, like an actual therapist, or like an older sister or brother or somebody that they can talk to, have a back and forth to help with mental health. And so I feel like if most of the students are looking for that when they get to create anything, I think that they'll probably be that kind of use case. More, you know, it can't just be that they want it. There's going to be people that are going to be creating it. And there's some apps that will, like, sort of AI-based apps that will talk back and forth to you from a mental health standpoint.
God, it's really interesting. It's telling us a lot about the world at the moment, right?
It is. And so when people complain about Gen Z and say, like, oh, they're so this, they're so that. And I'm like, actually, they're kind of looking to figure out what to do in the world and need some extra help. And you can't kind of blame them for what they grew up in. So I think for me, the for good is hopefully helping that generation feel more confident in themselves and figure out how to make change in a way that doesn't feel so overwhelming.
I'm going to do some quick fire get to know you answers. So a little bit of a change in, well, maybe not change in tempo, but certainly change in questioning. When are you happy?
My favorite time is really if I come and talk to somebody, they go, this technology has nothing to do with me. And I go, well, what do you do? And then start asking some questions in order to figure out where and how the technology could change what they do for better. And until they get to the point, and usually it's not that long, where they go, oh, I see how that could help. I see where that could get me to, how that might change what I do.
However big or small, what one day-to-day life hack couldn't you live without?
Headspace meditation in the morning.
Perfect. What was the last TV show that you binged and had to recommend?
I'm watching Dark Matter because I like quantum computing and people's pretend views of what superposition and quantum computing are like. Murder at the End of the World was also sort of similar.
When and how do you prioritize yourself?
There is this thing that which is kind of great in emerging tech where you gotta sort of believe your gut. And so I've been now teaching a couple of years, and only in the past few months that when I say, oh, I teach a class around avatars and virtual beings, but I've, you know, I work in AR, VR, XR, metaverse, spatial computing, whatever else, emerging tech, they're like, well, it's all connected. And I'm like, excuse me? Like, it's all connected. Like, that's so funny. Because 2 years ago, people were like, well, what are you interested yeah. in? And so I think that the prioritizing my own sort of gut feeling of this will be important, and then kind of diving into the research with it.
What do you rarely share about yourself?
I'm pretty open about lots of things. I think that I'm actually really bad at self-promotion.
Okay, let's go back to the topic for today, and we're going to look a bit ahead now. What happens then when AI creates something that looks, acts, feels like a human being? Are you worried about that? Are we talking about the end of the human race?
Our tendency to look at something and find a face in it, right? Our tendency to want to relate to things with faces, our tendency to believe what we read, like all of those kinds of believe what you see, and then you're going to have to believe this movement, this like video that looks so real, but it's not real, but it's so real, but it's not real, but I don't know. And so I think that understanding what is real or not real, understanding what is truly human or not human, that we get very philosophical there, but that's where I start getting more nervous of making decisions purely based on something that is not real, but in the moment we think it is. Do you remember those, I think it was like a year ago, those big red boots that look like cartoon boots that people were wearing fashion? Then it's like, there's, to me, I look at that and I go, well, of course, because those look so cartoony and these people are used to living in a sort of cartoon world. So having certain things start looking more cartoonish, start looking more digital, makes perfect sense. I don't think that there's necessarily lots and lots of proof out there of we created this just digitally and now it's in the physical world and we've made all this money. Like, I think that it hasn't happened yet, but there's one of those things where I don't have any doubt that it will, because it is so digital and physical has come together in so many ways. Even just the idea of, if you're not super technological, if you're not always in games, just think about how much the digital world influences your physical, like just Instagram and Snapchat. And you're like, oh, I'm going to have a Snapchat filter, see what this hair color looks like or what this eye make. Oh, and now I'm going to go buy it. Well, now take that and say you're spending most of your time as this avatar of yourself.
It is interesting. I was actually listening to my stepson's chatting the other day, and the littlest like couldn't give two hoots about fashion or anything like that. And his older brothers were a little bit more switched on, and they were kind of giving him some grief over that. So he updated his Snap avatar to be dressed more like his brothers. So, you know, Nike trainers and some cool cargos and things like that. That's where he did it first of all, because he could do it because it's all available. He doesn't have those clothes yet. Now he's created this persona. Now he wants to borrow his brother's clothes that look like that. But that wasn't, there wasn't a sort of thought process that, oh, I will try it out over here. It was just that's what was available. So of course, that's where you experiment.
There's Roblox puts out research reports sort of around this and around the behavior. And it is probably the most dense in a good way report talking about all the influences. And granted, that's just one platform, right? So you can't say, oh, that is 100% true for every other platform. But I love looking at that report and diving in and being like, oh, all these things are true. And you can wear the big fantasy gown or whatever it might be in Roblox, but then there are things that you might want to do in real life later. I remember I went to this to switch to like virtual reality, and I went to like a virtual reality meetup, and I did this kind of hairstyle that had like a shaved head on the side or whatever. And I had so many people come up to me, because I do think that if you're not 20, Yeah. Let's just say that, that you tend to create avatars that look a little bit more like you. But I experimented from a hairstyle standpoint, and I had many people come over to be like, Sam, you should totally do that hairstyle. Should totally shave the side of your head. And I was like, it's not going to happen. But maybe if I was 20, I would do it. But it does have this kind of influence on you.
So if we're shopping for our avatars, or our avatars could be shopping for us, are they going to be looking after our kids? Are they going to be managing our love lives? I mean, where does it end?
It depends on how much you already think that looking at Instagram stories is influencing parenting decisions or what you wear, right? You just sort of take that and say, well, what if it, and I like to do this, especially as it relates to avatars and virtual beings, like, okay, let's assume Instagram truly influences the way that you parent and what you wear. Now take Instagram and turn Instagram in your mind into a person. Like, it's your Instagram person. And you're having, instead of looking stuff up, you're kind of having a back and forth conversation of like, gosh, I don't know what to wear today. And the Instagram person could be like, well, you know, and make suggestions, or like, a lot of people are wearing this kind of thing, or people in your area are wearing that kind of thing. Oh, you looked at the picture yesterday wearing that. Maybe you want to try that. And you're like, oh, I'll do that. You know, or Instagram, I'm having issues with my son. He's doing it. Well, all of our contributors have said this thing or that thing. And then you're like, was that helpful? Was it not helpful? And then that kind of personalized interaction might not be, it just doesn't seem like it would be that far off. We're understanding now where it works and where it doesn't work. And I think that using not all of the data in the entire world, but instead limited data, right now companies are using like their own data within their company to create AI that's proprietary AI for their clients, right? And then so next, it's probably a smaller group. And then next after that, it's like individual use cases. And how long does it take to get there? Your guess is as good as mine. Everybody in emerging tech likes to say 3 to 5 years. Just wait, just look at 3 to 5 years. And it'd be like, but the 3 to 5 years, they'd say that next year too, until it actually happens. ChatGPT came out while I was teaching one of these classes. And I just had to like change a lot of the class, you know, and all this generative AI imagery, which is moving to generative AI video. And so you take that generative AI video, you add it with the AI beings or co-pilots or whatever you want to call it, and the creation of the Instagram person or virtual being is not that, like, I'm not talking 20 years from now. It's very, very close to possible right now. I think that maybe they'll end up being, you know, if we're talking commerce, like you have to pay to get that. And then eventually it becomes so ubiquitous that you're not paying for it. Do we want to trust that virtual being of Instagram? That, I mean, that's the same way, I guess, of like, do you want to trust any of the technology now? I think.
Well, do you want to trust search? Do you want to trust technology we've relied on for a long time now? We have decided to trust it because we use it every day.
I always get the like, is this going to lead us into some horrible dystopic future? You know, that's where people tend to go. And I'm like, in as much as we as humans do that, not in as much as the technology does that. If we trust these virtual beings to tell us only the truth, then yeah, which is that, I mean, that's the internet, that's social media. This is the kind of thing. And so it's almost like a different kind of platform, but I consider it part of that digital future, that if the world around us is becoming more digital, that's why I became interested in all this in the first place, is what happens to individual people and what happens when that AI becomes more person-like or being-like.
Are you more positive or anxious about the future?
I think when I started learning about new technologies, I was really positive. And then I got, you know, I go through a phase of being negative. And there's also this kind of other curve. I love my curves, which at the end, like when somebody knows something really, really well, after they say, I know everything, I know nothing, then they go, it's complicated. And I'm at that stage where it's, am I positive or am I negative? No, it's complicated, which is there's a lot of things that are amazing. You're not going to be able to stop the innovation and the direction that we're going, but we need to be more aware than ever before of the negative impact of these technologies. Don't collect all the data. There's going to be so much data and so much personal data that if you're an executive there, don't collect all of it. Figure out how much, where, when, for how long. Trust and safety is going to be more important than ever, ever before, because there's just going to be so much data about ourselves and about the world around us. So that's where I end up going, it's complicated.
Thank you to Samantha G. Wolf for joining us on Lives of Tomorrow. Founder of Pitch FWD, talking about ways that consumers will shop in the future and what opportunities this brings for brands. Next week, WGSN's Create Tomorrow podcast is back with another episode where our experts discuss the future of festival fashion. If you've got any inputs for me to consider, or maybe even know a good guest that you'd think people would love to listen to on this podcast, then please send an email to lives@wgsn.com. I'm Carla Bizzarchi, CEO of WGSN, and I'll see you next time.